You know, it's crazy, like, you know, Tin Can Phone, it started in prison, you know, and when we came home, they kept, like, our first interviews and all of our first content in bondage. We had to start over, you know what I'm saying? We lost our mom and we lost Joe, but we gained Blue, Tin Can Phone.
Did that time and I bounced back. Had us in the beanies, now snap back. Boys in blue trying to snap back. Trying to make sure that my guys never go back. Ain't worried about the instas and the Snapchats. I'm worried about the homies on drugs. Close to really fast. It's messed up when you know the dealer and the buyer. Look him in his eyes, I can tell if he lying. Been locked up with gorillas in the lines. Yeah, respect it, get you far and don't move around blind. Forget about the chow hall, I ain't waiting in line. Bust down on the bed, spread with the homies. Not no more, we on the streets waiting for him. Free such and such, free with the wop. We all on cable talking it out. Me, Mike, and Blue and a couple of guests. Poppin' knowledge like petrol, who got the gas? Blue went to work, tryna heal for my past. Politicking on the yard, tryna touch me a bag. Mike was on the yard with the hitters in the sav. Orange beanie on his head with the thing in the bag. Blue photo shoot fresh, sharp enough to cut a wrist. First day of school, coolin' ain't with the cuddling. Tin can phone, yes, gang in the bitch. Tin can phone, yes, gang in the bitch. Tin can phone, yes, gang in the bitch. Mike, Blue, Queens.
That's so congratulations about this month.
Is that something our record prevent you from being able to do?
It could have, yeah. I mean, it's like you have to pass character and fitness to be an attorney. So if you have stuff on your record, it can get in the way, yeah. So it's like, it's all, anyways, it's like there's a purpose or, there's something, it's all like for a reason.
Well, I was just going to say the only thing they did was get rid of your record. Like what?
Like so that's like part of the pending stuff that I can't go into too much detail about. But
as long as it's pending, that's enough for us.
Yeah.
You know, or to make clear that they got you and there was no, I mean, because I was, as the story was unfolding, I was like, oh, did this person like legally die and then get resuscitated? And they were like pinning you on that theoretical reality paradigm, but it was just an incident of like neglect. Fascinating.
Or something engineered to do damage to a person because they think they're doing the right thing. Sure. They would justify anything, right? And that's the whole system justifies itself constantly. And they say, oh, you know what? You know, we might break a few eggs, you know, to make an omelet, but it's crazy, right? That's like, it's over and over that this story gets played out. And Adams is in ways unique,
Basta.
Crazy, but it's not the only one, you know? And I'm so glad that you were able to find that out and learn that. It's like, equally, I was talking to my sister-in-law about the latest Supreme Court ruling, which is going to end in my case being void, dismissed, overturned, reversed, and then eventually my record will be expunged, you know, and there's a process to do that. But she said to me, she goes, it just takes me back to that time and it makes me so angry. You know, it's like, we can live in the place of like gratitude, and I do, and she does, about being like ready for this change and being ready for the Oregon Supreme Court to do the right thing, which is going to affect a bunch of people. And I'm one of them, and be thankful, but they always knew it was wrong. And chances are they always knew what they were doing to Adam. They always knew what they were doing. You know what I mean?
Boom, boom, boom.
A mix up, like the dude is dead and he's not dead. That's pretty big mix up. I never made a mix up like that in my life. And everybody used to say that to me sometimes, but you know, not to oversimplify, but just to say, man, it's terrifying. You know, it's a scary thing they did to you.
Which is also kind of interesting. It's like when they arrest you, it's like, this guy's dead. And then it's like, okay, now we're going to sentence you based on this. There's been days and weeks. We didn't check if the guy's still dead, but we made sure that you made it to jail.
Sucks. I just was earlier, I swear I heard you say that you never really accept the fact that you did it or that dude was behind it. Am I correct about that statement?
No, I think I was just saying that it was like I questioned like whether it was like my fault, you know what I mean? Like I was kind of, I mean, I knew that, you know, he had died from overdose, but it wasn't like I put the gun to his head, you know.
Well, your intent, you always knew that questioning is in is tuition, because you would have been able to say comfortably like, damn, I did that, or damn, I played. But you always had that question in your head because you just like, what, you know, that's not, you got to pay attention to that little sign. And also, I also had another question, but then I forgot, I lost it listening. But I knew the importance of that doubt you had. I caught it earlier. You were just like, man, like, I just, I didn't know. And I just felt like, I felt like that was your tuition. I felt like a lot of people don't really listen to that and work. Like even you taking a deal, you never wanted to take that deal because you never believed you did that. And due to our system, you signed the deal because the scare tactics of we're going to give you 20 years, not understanding that, you know, most of Oregon convictions come from plea deals because nobody wants to go get that maximum charge. But I just really wanted to highlight that belief in yourself and the fact that even in your darkest days, like you had that little bit of doubt that you did that. And you held on to that and you was answered at the end that it most definitely wasn't you. And that's a blessing. And I was going to ask you, did you ever at once feel like you was rescued instead of arrested? Because it seemed like you was in a pretty dark place when you got arrested. And then you were in such a lightful place when you came home.
Yep. No, so, I think, you know, as much as I don't want to ever credit the state for anything because they didn't do any of this for me, you know what I mean? Nothing. Mm-mm. I did this for myself. But yeah, I think that like, you know, I benefited from having an interruption in like the behaviors that I was engaged in. You know, I might be dead right now if I hadn't gone to prison. I think that what I experienced in prison and like the person I am today and like the trajectory I'm on now that's like awesome is like, it's not because they gave that to me. Like I took that, you know what I mean? I did that for me, but like, no, I agree. At some level I got rescued because it was like, I was in a bad way. You know what I mean? I wasn't doing good. Now I'm doing great.
Yeah.
That same sentiment is really, you know, Ben Hall's interview, the guy who passed away. Which is interesting because Blue and I were doing a project and we actually commissioned Ben to participate and we paid him and he OD'd before. I mean, we were able actually, I mean, he had a compendium of content. We probably will continue to mine from that compendium of content and continue to have him represented in our work. But just is kind of, yeah, there's so many layers to like my personal experience being like, I mean, there's also an interesting, I guess, a particularly interesting flavor in this conversation. And I may have said this once or twice, but like, I mean, I gave him like $100, like that's enough to kill someone. You know what I mean? And so like, the timeline wasn't right that was really what happened, but, you know, is just really interesting about, you know, but and anyway, we could talk about that, but, yeah, he was a major proponent in his interview. So it's kind of fascinating that we have this interview, right? And like all, a bunch of interviews, which I guess for something I'll bring up later, but we, in chatting with Armand and the book design team with We Rise Media, they, we were like doing this kind of report back where Armand would like speculate or share what he knew about dudes where they were now. I mean, obviously Ben was gone, but a lot of the dudes were like estranged or back inside or whatever. There was way fewer who was like, oh, they're actually doing all right. And interestingly enough, all three pundits from Tin Can Phone are there. So that's cool. I hadn't really thought about it that way. But yeah, Ben in that interview in particular says like, yeah, I got my degrees, I did all this stuff, also shared horrible stories and was like, yeah, like I'm in a better place, but I did this like despite the circumstances. And I think that's like maybe one of the paragons of this show and this platform is that, you know, funnily enough, I mean, there are guys who are all over the place, they don't make it on the show because they're all over the place, at least if not for other reasons. But you know, the guys who make it on the show are pretty exemplary in a larger context. And all that is despite and not, and even in this particular context, fascinating, you know, that both you and Blue had these extremely peculiar circumstances in which your crimes were, time was served, but you know, the crime was dubbed as like something that's not, that didn't happen.
Well, and I think back to what Blue had said, you know, it's like the, you know, like you said, you serve the time, you go through all this experience of like being in prison and, you know, losing those years and, you know, still trying to make something positive of it. But at the end of it, you know, it's like the ultimate redemption or whatever is the dismissal. But it's like, what is that? You know what I mean? Like, I already did the time. You're going to dismiss it? Like, what good does that do me today? You know what I mean? So I think that it's, you know, as much as I am happy that it's off my record and that the DA agreed to dismiss it, that doesn't make me whole. You know what I mean? That doesn't give me back what was taken. Like that's how our system is though. That's like the, okay, like here's a dismissal, like, good work.
It's so wild because it's the, and I may have said this before on the show, but it's that nobody wins with the system. Even when you win, all you've really done is lost less. Like, you've mitigated your loss. You've lessened your loss or the thing. And it's like, not everybody in the system and not everybody inside is able to create their own program, right? And it may work for you and it may not, right? Like, I'm really glad that you could and that Queez did and that I found my own way of having purpose. And I think I also was fueled by, and so many guys in there are like, yeah, I did wrong, you know, like, or I screwed up or I did this or I compromised my integrity or whatever it is, but I didn't do this, you know, this other thing, right? Like, yeah. It's a big thing. It's like, oh, or you're guilty of a charge, like a human. I've met so many people that were guilty of a charge, but once that guilt came in, then the system added five different things that had nothing to do with this person. It's just is what it is. It's a machine that chews us up, right? And it's still chewing on us. It's still chewing on you, right? It's still chewing on us. And what's next, right? We don't know. We don't know.
I was going to say that earlier. I'm hearing the record expunged and I'm hearing that you get to experience that. But in my heart, I'm like, damn, like, you did the time, and that comes with so much mental instability, trauma, dehumanization. Like, it's so much that come with that. And I'm asking myself, like, I don't really know what it would feel like. One, I don't know what it feel like to be arrested for something I didn't do. When I got arrested, I did it. So I don't know what that feel like. But to do all the time and to go through what you went through, your family, because when we get arrested, we're stolen from our family. You feel what I'm saying? Like, they don't call moms like, hey, we're taking your son, or that's kidnapped to our family, and then we're not. So to go what they went through, yes, I'm glad that you guys are examples of them being wrong. That's one thing that I really love. But for you, I'm just like, y'all did that time. And for so long, y'all heart was not complete, because whether you was brainwashed through the system, through the process to believe you may have did it or not, a place in your heart, you and Blue, a place in your heart, a place in your brain, a place in your soul knew that you didn't, right? And to go through all those years, and no matter what, when you get your name looked up on the computer, when any that Google, that's what's gonna come up, and that becomes the person that you are. And in your heart, you know you're not. To me, expunging my record, yeah, that should be mandatory. Why do I even have to fight about that? But, like, you would never be the same person that, the, you know, like, that changes your life forever. And even though there's a couple, like Blue said, us that were able to, you know, chin up, chest out, and make it through and only grow who we are and not kind of digress, I don't know if you could take that from somebody, like, getting your record expunged isn't enough. Like, that just sounds disrespectful in such a victory or the time of a victory. But in my heart, I'm looking like, man, forget that. Like, what about his mental health? Like, what about his heart? What about, you know, and then I was thinking, like, what if you sent those letters off that you wrote? You feel me? Saying all these things that you felt and what these people made you believe about yourself to this family. And they like, he in jail. You know, like, man. But I just think about what your heart had to go through, man, and that just, I apologize, man, for what your heart had to go through and for them to put that shit on you. You feel what I'm saying? Knowing that that wasn't you, like, you know, tin can flow, man, we glad you made it through that and sane enough to be able to prosper in life, because so many times we see the ones that don't. So we salute you for having that strength, and we salute you over here at Tin Can Flow for having the strength to speak up. You're going into a career in a place where you're going to be able to fight for the ones that went through what you went through. So every case you take, I feel like it's a difference. If my lawyer would have ever told me he'd been in my shoes, that's a lawyer I'm f***ing with, you know?
Dude, that's funny. I feel at first I was like, who wants a lawyer that's been to prison? But then I started thinking about it. I was like, I want a lawyer that's been to prison. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Exactly. I was already trying to hire you earlier in the show. And then I was like, wait a second, he still has to go to law school. You know what I mean? Yeah. For real.
Yeah, we salute your strength, though. And we're most definitely happy that, you know, your mental health is straight enough for you to prosper, man. I stress the mental side of that, because to go through that and to be brainwashed to believe something about yourself, it's hard enough when it comes from the streets and family and like, but when you got a whole entire corrupt system that did it to you and you was able to stay solid, hey man, over here at 10 Can Phone, we for sure salute you for that. Yes, sir.
I think one thing that I always hear, like none of us are trying to go back, right? Like none of us are trying to, I just mean like even back in time or like say, give me those years back. Like we get it. Like we're still on the path of what we want to be doing in our lives, right? We're still, if we know the right thing is to like enrich the people around us and like make a positive shift and make a positive change, we're still on that path. But man, it sure would be great for people to know what this system really does, that it's not just this little exception, that it's like the rule, the
system. Well, that's what I feel like, that's such a big like part of my like purpose and like meaning now, is that like I've seen, you know, I've seen what's in there, I've seen what's inside the prisons, and I've seen the way that our legal system works, and I've seen the way that it, you know, even people that are guilty, the way that they get treated and the way that, you know, the systems that exist inside prison and what they, you know, what people have to go through, and then when they get out and the fact that they've, you know, lost everything and that they've, you know, been robbed of so much, it's just like, I think that just fuels, you know, what I'm doing now. And it's like, my story is like, you know, crazy. Your story, Blue, is crazy. But it's like, the thing is, anyone who's been arrested before has had interactions with police, that's been to jail, that's been to prison, like has that same experience, dude. That's just, the system is broken. It's not like there's not just a couple of like isolated incidents where bad things, you know, happen. It's that the system itself is flawed. And it's like, that's like the universal experience for everyone that encounters this.
Yeah, this is all, usually as someone who my primary way of experiencing it, and I mean when COVID hit was kind of like the end of my time being inside, it's likely I'll end up back there, but is even only more recently like reopening. But my experience remains kind of contextualized through this way where folks are talking about it, which I guess I feel personally privileged. A lot of the times the show itself has become a platform in which folks can talk about it meaningfully for themselves. And so that's another privilege that of mine, to be like a part of it, but also to witness it. But it is also fascinating because most of the time folks are like trying to not talk about it, either because it's traumatizing or it blows up their spot or whatever. And so it's ideal and wonderful that it can be like therapeutic in this setting, as well as like, I was thinking during this recent back and forth, how powerful it is for the listeners who would otherwise no way to hear any of this. And then we were talking about how you're the guy, you went inside, you got 40 firefighters out, you saved houses, and then you're gonna be like post-prison, no record lawyer guy. And you know, this show, I may be the only radio show that talked about non-unanimous jury decision. And so this, yeah, this platform is kind of amazing for, because, you know, we talk about this and we're like, it's sort of not rare, it's everyone, but it's so rare that a platform is even platforming this. And I was thinking about it as everyone's talking, like what really exists. And like, not that it's in competition, you know, but that like the other podcast that is really going deep on the prison experience and was kept getting referred to me when we were starting the show, Ear Hustle. And it's so sexy. It's like, this is prison. And like, it's edited super good. And the stories are like captivating, but it's all the vanilla shit that like you also wouldn't know, but it doesn't change your perception. I mean, it does, I think, in the kind of we're not monsters category, it does humanize folks who have been incarcerated, but it does not create, and I haven't listened to the whole compendium, but my understanding of what I did listen to is more of it has like this entertainment value than like a political platform that is holding space for a thing that has other facets, but in particularly the podcast world, but my understanding of these other facets is it's like very diehard citizen folks who are collaborating with people who are like currently formerly incarcerated, but those efforts struggle to stay together or all this stuff. And so, yeah, I just want to echo everyone that, I mean, if you don't already have rooms that are like, well, you're a total badass, like this is one of them, and it'll go out on the airwaves. So that's cool. And I wanted to, I mean, we can keep talking about all kinds of stuff, but I want to zoom back a little to your, and I'm glad we, I think we got through the story, but, and it will obviously be interesting to have you back on the show, actually, like as you start this journey and other things, and maybe we work on other projects together that are like not radio based, but something that you said earlier that you did a really brilliant job of contextualizing was that, you know, you were using drugs. I feel like it was really resonant how you held that experience like as genuinely yours. And it was also, I don't remember at this point what you said, but careful listeners will be able to tie it all together. But you were kind of getting at my own philosophy where, and like I guess to bring it full circle for us as a conversation, you know, I'm an artist and I went to my undergrad was sculpture and I was like making objects. It's like a super long story, but the shorter version is I was just like, man, this is not fulfilling. Like the way they teach art is like the Diego Rivera, it's like painted the worker reunion and like this where like the artist, you thought like social change was coming out of the paintbrush or something. And then I was like over here, like doing the stuff and like, wait a minute, this is isolated. Like the audience is the bourgeois, like this is not working for me. And so that's kind of what transitioned my focus. And now I like practice as an artist doing this other stuff. But I also, it, for me, you know, part of, I was like, you know, I was doing at the time, I was doing a lot of environmental awareness and engagement. And I was like looking at that and I was just like, oh, like if the issue, if you're like, I'm going to focus on this point, but it doesn't, it's like, doesn't penetrate like the bubble. And like, unless you focus on like shrinking the bubble, which means tackling everything like food scarcity, like all the stuff simultaneously. And so something that was really exciting that you mentioned, the second reference was when you talked about your cellmates and how like, even though they were skinheads, they were also like just normal folks. They had issues with substance. And you said other things like, you know, when you relapsed, you were feeling alone after. And so my big thing is like how mental health is really like the only problem or something. And due to like chronically ignoring it or also like, you know, child abuse and other stuff that caused these things. And so I was also this show. So between Ben and their overdose, and I don't think I made this connection, but when I talked to him once, and it may even have been on the show on our first episode, Ben made a cameo that, you know, he got out during COVID era and it was just so lonely. And even on his recorded interview, he was talking about how he had this very intimate community inside and people would have losses on the outside and they would cry and like be together and but like secret, you know, like, but that super community that was like marching to the beat of the system of the room and all this stuff. But the nature of that connection was what kept everyone afloat. And so when he got out, even though everyone was like, Ben's our guy, but he was like alone in some house. And he's like, it's not like I can shout and 40 guys are like, what's up? And so that loneliness comes in. And then there's also another character who's a part of our universe. And for me, that was the closest that I was to relapse where, and it was particularly with Aaron. So all the way that you were talking about it, it's ritualization, the culture, the people who you're with, and all of these things. I kind of like, I remember I was taking this guy to rehab and I think we talked about it on the show, but for you, it was wild, like, because they also got arrested and they detoxed while they were arrested. And so they were doing all right. And then they got f***ed up again. And we had opportunities for them and they were messing it up because they couldn't be sober. And I was like, look, man, like, I want to help you do cool art stuff, but I think what I need to help you do is get clean. So we agreed to set up a time to go to rehab and he like blasted himself with everything he had and he was like stumbling in there and they were like, oh, we don't have beds. And he's like, fuck, like, can I borrow $20? I was like, nah, you made this bed and you will lay in it because you can't move. So you bed. And we finally got him in and then he checked himself out. He's like, oh, I just needed the detox. I'm good. And did other messed up stuff. But I haven't, after that, I was like, look, man, I will help you get rehab. But other than that, I don't think I can help you. And so, yeah, I'm curious for you to unpack it a little bit for folks, because you did a really great job of talking about this ritual. And he was saying that too. He's like, oh man, like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, my ritual's gone. And yeah, just to unpack it for folks, because like, I don't think people get it, how powerful a substance is and how it kind of like, yeah, comes into your life and makes you not so cool.
It does too. And it's, you know, it's like, I'm so far removed from it now. You know, I've been clean for over 6 years. And so it's like, some parts of it are just like, it seems so crazy and like, you know, ridiculous now looking back, you know, to see like how I was and who I was and the things I was doing. But when you're in the middle of it, it's just like water. It's like, you need it. You know what I mean? You need it. And it's like, it gives you, I feel like living in that lifestyle has a component that, you know, a lot of people miss too. There's physical addiction for sure. That's a thing. And it's like legit and it's real, but there's also like living that lifestyle and feeling like you're a part of a community and feeling like you're someone and you're doing something and you're, you know, and it gives you purpose. And it's like, you know, maybe it might be obviously not like the best purpose, but it's something. And it's for, you know, I think that so much of going back to the, you know, I mean, we're talking about like how it's like getting out, having community is like a really important thing. And it's like the difference between people that make it and people that don't make it a lot of times, but it's like, it's what we seek as humans, you know what I mean? And it's like, we live in a world today in a society where it's like, there's a lot of pressures to be like individual and have your own shit and like make money and be successful and do you and worry about you. And, you know, and it's like, I don't know, there's just like a deep seated internal desire to connect to other people. And, you know, it's like you look for ways to do that. And, you know, I think that drugs and criminal lifestyle and gangs and all those things are like, they can fill that hole. And like, you know, in a way that is hard for people to do in different ways. And so it's like, it's an easy fallback. I understand why people go back. I mean, you know, like you said, you're looking at people that are doing great and successful and awesome right now. And I'm sure that's like, you know, the people that you guys get on the show, but you know, I know a lot of people that I did time with that I was like, this dude's going to make it and he's going to be good. And he's not, he's dead now, or he's back in jail, or he's, you know, and it's like, and it's just you know, I can't even tell you what the difference is between the person that makes it and the person that doesn't. It's like, it's hard. It's sad, you know?
Sometimes it's sitting on the edge of a razor blade, because we were just talking in our last show with a guy who has done amazing things and is doing amazing things. And he was even talking about so many times being on that sort of ledge, you know, between, you know, like saying F it, you know, and just like, you know, giving it up, whether it's sobriety or, you know, doing what the PO's saying or just living. And I think it's like a lot of people sit on that precipice. I think I told everybody that, I mean, I was like ready to leave the country, you know, like I had like a whole plan, like, how do I get out of this? Like, just so that I don't have to feel the way I feel and escape it. Right. And we see so many people, just like you said, I know more people who have passed away after getting out than I do that are doing good or even doing anything. So, man,
it's choice. At the end of the day, it's choice. So we all get to choose what we're going to do. You feel me? And like a lot of people, I always say this, a lot of people highlights in the best part of their lives is in prison. That's where you could go and become somebody without actually being anybody. And when you come home, like I've actually seen people sabotage their coming home because they didn't, you don't got nothing to come home to. You don't mess your family over. You don't stole from everybody. You allowed your addiction to put you in situations where you ain't got no support. But when you were in prison, you got all the homeboys. You're the big bad dude. We know you will fight. So when people get put in a position where they at home, it's easy to lie to a woman over the phone and get her to send you a little bit of money. Like when you come home and you promise and you got all these responsibilities, like you got to live up to. And usually in prison, all you got to do is have the story. You don't really got to live up to what the story entails. So the mental state, and that's why I kept saying earlier, that I salute you guys' mental state, y'all mental stability after going through that. It's the mental state where, like, if I struggle with what I think I need to look like to society and what I'm supposed to be doing in society, then I'm automatically going to always feel wrong. And also, another thing I always, like I said, me and Michael used the snake reference, but it's like, we live in, you got to think, we're in a time where being in prison is praised by certain people in the community or certain people in certain lifestyles. And that becomes the only thing we focus on is like, I'm this big bad dude who did all this time. That's why people are proud of, I did 20 years, I did 50 years. like, boy. But like that becomes,
you're only 20 like, years old. How'd you do 10 years already?
Yeah, but so like even me being in the space that I'm in right now, I'm around, like I work with a lot of people who have zero incarceration experience, or even those people who, average white guys. Yeah, I'm the only black dude. But like I found myself the other day, like they was asking me questions about prison, and I kind of the way I expressed my answers was as if it's like, yeah, I'm the one who went to prison, motherfucker. You feel me? Afterwards, when I was sitting in my car, I was like, why did I present it like that? Like, I was kind of disgusted with myself. Why did I present it like that? Like, that's fucking weird. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't even know why I presented it like that. But we have to understand, like, mental stability, bro, like, it's so important. Because all it takes is for somebody to be like, you're a fuck up. And if you believe it, and you know your whole life that you've been, bro, that could cause people to go to, like, suicide. Because, and I say that because it's a personal experience with a friend, and one thing that he always expresses, like, man, I don't even know when I'm doing right. Like, I don't know what that looked like, because my whole life I've been told I was a f-. So I live into f- up. It's like the mental stability to know, like, you have to believe who you are, because anybody could give an opinion and you could run with that. And if you believe it because you're not mentally strong enough to know who you are, self-worth, self-love, self-awareness, it'll drive you. And if you're looking at one of my biggest problems was my decisions was made off of what I thought would be right in society view. Like, what would I look like to the world? How am I going to look when I present this? And all my decisions was being made off of that. And I was depressed. And I was just like, I'm free, but I'm not free, because I'm mentally enslaved to being seen a certain way. And a lot of people, like our friend that Michael was talking about, begin to feel like you can see through them and through the shell. So then they start staying away from them that care. So it's like, let me borrow $20. Like, no, I get you some food, but like really going to get you clean. That means you see me. And if I know you see me because you see me for who I am, I got to leave you alone. And even I was telling Michael, I cut the closest ones off to me when I'm not doing right. Or even when I just feel like I'm not, because you going to be able to see me. And that, like, you know, I talked to Ben multiple times on the streets, and all he wanted was like, let's just link up. Let's just get together. Let's just get. And it hurt me because of the space I was in. I just wasn't able to. But like that loneliness is like, man, it's choice. Michael always tell me, make the choice. Make the choice.
This is Misfit Radio, right?
Come on, man. Trauma almost won. Trauma almost won.
Trauma almost won. But that's the thing for all of us, right? Like, we knew that we're misfits. Like, each one of us knew that, but we could have bought in to not being a miss. I'm going to fit in. We could have tried. Like, who knows? Yep. You get in where you fit in sometimes. But here's the thing. We made the choice, right? And I think we got to wrap up, I think. But we
got a few more minutes.
Running along with all these things, these undercurrents of, like, fear, right? And those guys that you went into that cell with, and we're talking about, like, humanizing people that have, like, swastikas tattooed on their bodies, right? It's like, the truth is, so many people don't even buy into their own rhetoric, right? Many of those guys inside were just trying to survive and just trying to find what they considered a family or what they considered safety, right? Yeah. And they were afraid. And I think that just permeates through everything, and they're in a system that supports violence, right? Mm-hmm. It supports it through its practice. Because they know that there's a better way. And that's, I think, just an important thing, is when we do talk about understanding all the people in there on the inside, or what is a monster. In my whole time, there was only a few humans that I came into contact with that I actually was like, man, that didn't feel so great. Like, I don't know if I want to kick it around that human, just because, and try to give everybody a chance, but just because it actually, maybe they didn't respect your boundaries, or maybe they didn't respect your space for whatever reason. But that was this like small group, like Adam was talking about, and like recognizing, like, people, like, trauma, and then the person, like, peeking out of the trauma sometimes. And so many of the people in there too started at McLaren, you know, or started at Youth Authority, never got to play on the sports teams, never got to be part of a high school, never got to just like live a life or have support from family or do any of those things. And all of a sudden, bam, they're in this environment that is like really hard to navigate, you know? It's interesting. I just say one more thing, but I remember my family used to be like, you're strong. Like you were talking about, like, we hold on to the time that we did. Like, nobody can take that away from us in the sense that we survived it. Right. And like, I don't talk about my time a lot, but it's like, I mean, I survived 12 years in prison and I almost didn't, you know, I almost did not. And so remembering that, you know, whenever, when things are bad, is like, none of them are as bad. Nothing is as bad as it was when it was at its worst, and we've survived everything that we've ever come up against. And it's like, so yeah, I still own that. You know, I don't own it with the sense of pride. Like if I could choose any rite of passage to go through, like that's not the one I would choose, but it's the one that chose me and I made it. So I think that's, it's important, you know? And then when people see us, what do they see? Do we see us just living out of our trauma, or do they see like Queez, like speaking beautiful things, or Adam getting people out of prison or supporting people to fight for equity or justice? You know, I think that that's like, and obviously Michael, even not having the same experience, has his own like trauma experiences that he overcomes. So it's like, that's life, right? And I think it's good. I think it's great when people can meet us and they never know until we tell them, right? And that's because like you do the work, right? I mean, if you want to sit in your trauma all the time and let everything be a trigger or a struggle, and trauma is real, man, but we do the work, right? So
yeah, I mean, there's so many interesting layers. I'll try to keep all my facts straight, but I was thinking right at the end when you were talking, Blue, like there are a bunch of guys like Joe and Armand who are doing great, but a part of that is like leaving the whole thing behind. And that is a some form of compartmentalization of trauma in a way. Both those guys are like younger than everyone else here. So part of that is even like trying to get back as if it never happened or whatever, you know, whatever their individual situation is. But the reason I brought that up is they are not then poster persons of like making it, because a lot of folks don't even know what happened. And what they do know is the more grim stories or the scary stories that scare them. And the other thing that's interesting is like by them, because like the only reason I'm involved or can be involved or my involvement makes sense is because I have compatriots who have the experience, and it would be very hard for me to navigate and advocate and fight against the system if I wasn't being informed and had like, it's easy for me because I just point away from myself. But if I was having to even have a greater level of mastery or understanding somehow independent of collaboration. So all that's really interesting to me. I was also thinking about how, you know, it's, this is the second time I think that Blue brought up that he was thinking of getting out of here. And I think at the time that you brought it up, I was excited that it came up, but whatever the flow of the show, I didn't say anything about it. But I remember that period. And as Blue's community at that time, it was like concerning to me. But I also, I remember I would like ask about it, but I tried to like talk about it in ways that gave us both plausible deniability later, mm-hmm. because I knew that Blue was getting like tested. So I didn't want to be like, so you're thinking of breaking the law, huh? And having be like, yes, I am. And then later, like, you know, having had that conscious moment, you know? And so, but it was a fascinating moment. Because again, it's like, if you had, then this other thing probably wouldn't have worked for you because you would have been doing another fucked up thing or something, who knows. But, and at that time we had no idea that you would be able to like have this moment where you're not even in a get free moment, but at least some of the kind of emotional stigmas can like dissipate or start to kind of wither. But yeah, it's ideal, though is interesting. Because neither is the navigating, which is a fascinating another layer for this audience, is like, and I remember in one of the first episodes, Joe's grandmother was just like, what do I do? What do I do? Because she was on the show as like an audience member, because it was like a live digital show. And she was like, I just want to know how to like fix it. I mean, she didn't say that, but like wants to be, is like, if it could be done, they would do it. Just tell me. And in a way, there's no straight answer. And then the other way is like, it's to be there, be part of the community. And it's slow and hard and fucked up, and they still might die or whatever. But navigating that razor's edge as like a cheerleader or supporter is like to expose yourself to the emotional hurt and harm in a way where it doesn't, you can't fully insulate yourself from it to like look at it head on. But again, like echoing the absence of that was kind of like the loss for Ben. And, you know, again, was really interesting what you were saying about whether it's gangs or drugs, is that there's such a deep yearning in the human experience to be a part of a community that if ostracized, you will then seek that out in a place that is not helping you. And so there's a couple of things I want to position back to you, Adam, is like, I liked in a way, or it's just an interesting truth that you're so far from your days of using that you, it's like kind of like a little bit of a stretch to like really have those memories feel real in some ways. But that one question I was thinking of for a while ago is like, you know, how do you stay on the level now? It doesn't seem like it would be enticing to you, but I'm just curious to unpack that in conversation of this, where like folks who are listening, whether they are users using or they are a support person for someone, to just like further nuance their understanding. And then I'm curious also like what communities you're a part of now that are kind of making and holding space for folks, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, I'm involved in recovery groups. So that's like part of the truth of where I'm at today and like some of the communities that I'm involved with. I'm probably not as involved as some people, more involved than others, I guess, but it's just sort of, it's a component of like what I have. I'm involved in ways where I'm like a elected member and I do things where I go to like state level groups and do like a lot of organizing and stuff. So there's, you know, a space for that for me. I don't think that, you know, I'm not the one that's going to tell you that like the only way to figure it out is to go to recovery meeting, because some people don't like that and that's fine. But, you know, I know a lot of people that don't do that. I think that for me today, it's like I don't have a yearning to like go out and get loaded, but, you know, I do have that, you know, like Blue was talking about, there is that, you know, as much as, you know, it's just like, I feel like being in prison, they work so hard to dehumanize you, and the way that they treat you and the way that you feel about yourself and the way that like you start thinking about yourself and the way you just have to exist, it becomes so like, it's just, it crushes your ego and like your self-respect in so many ways. So there is like, you know, what I do see in myself today is that like, sometimes that's fragile, you know, like I have, like, I can sit here and I can list off all these amazing accomplishments and like where I'm at today and how it's like so awesome. And like, I'm so proud of myself and like be completely honest. And like, you know, I am like, I am really proud of like who I am, what I'm doing, where I'm headed, things I've accomplished. At the same time though, it's like, I am so close to just being like, I'm just a f**k, and this is, you know, I don't know what the f**k I'm talking about and I'm an idiot. And, you know, it's like, that's a slippery slope where that turns into like, feeling bad about myself, feeling isolated, not wanting to be around other people. Like that's the, you know, like we're talking about with, you know, just like trying to not show that, like that part of myself. And so I think that, you know, that inevitably can lead back to addiction or to act abuse or to destructive behavior and stuff like that. And so, you know, I try and be mindful of that because it is a thing. And it's like, you know, I have to check myself when I'm like letting other people dictate how I feel about myself or like who I think I am or, you know, what, you know, like whether I think I'm a good person or not, because it's easy to get trapped in that, you know what I mean? Where like someone says something critical and maybe they're not even that serious about it, but it's like, it starts going and I'm just like, you know, all of a sudden I'm like going back and like, man, I am really a piece of shit. You know, and it's like, that's not true. That's not like, you know, it's like, so anyways, I do struggle with that. And I think that it is a thing that a lot of us go through, and it's not just people who've been in prison, but it's like, you know, it's a thing that I exist with. And I, you know, I try and navigate in different ways. I also have, you know, at work is like my work is a great part of my community. You know, I don't think that for everyone, that's always the case. Like, but I work with, you know, all these people who are like doing such awesome work with like Oregon Innocence Project and people that are doing stuff with, you know, within OJRC, there's all these different projects and I work with all these different attorneys and they're all, I mean, you know, it's like, I see how my knowledge and experience is like, can be valuable in a lot of the spaces where I exist, which I think is a big thing. I think it's important to feel like, you know, like for me, it's important to feel like I'm doing something and that, you know, that I can contribute in a meaningful way to like stuff that I'm doing. I volunteered a lot of different places. I volunteer at Past Lives, which Blue knows very well, helped a lot actually with stuff that's going on over there now. And, you know, I do criminal record expungement clinics up at PCC, but I think all that stuff's important though. You know what I mean? And it's not necessarily, you don't have to go out, like, I don't think, you know, you have to go volunteer all your time like that, but it's like, you got to find something that matters. You know, I think that's like, it's important.
Yeah. I think it's really elusive like fulfillment, finding fulfillment, like in the human experience. I'm excited that you are and that we are able to talk about it, because I do think that the show, I recently met someone who's younger and a student and they're studying this stuff. And I mentioned this and they like listened to the first episode and the like more than the recent episodes. And they, you know, I even were doing a new, that project, the $20,000 project. I'm trying to find out by area code how many people in like the Albina district kind of went to the element, like the particularly Black elementary, middle and high schools and ended up incarcerated. And like, what's the correlation there? And they're like, ooh, that's an interesting statistical quandary. And so, you know, but like this show really, as we were saying before, and in a way it's like, I don't know, people commend me for this work. They don't even have to have experienced it. Just like, oh, I go to prison, whatever. They're like, whoa, amazing. But I think we did a good job today of recapping our history and like really, I've been sleeping on this project in a way just because life has been busy, but I think that it's actually in a really good and secure place to kind of blast off. So yeah, I really appreciate you being on the show and all the things you said. A couple final thoughts for me was that I was thinking about how Oregon has decriminalized the substances. And so, and I say to people, I'm like, yeah, I bet it's easy to do in a state that's predominantly white, because of who it's actually affecting and all this stuff. But essentially the reality is that now, if before when you were picked up, they were like, oh, this sucks, like, let's get you some help. So I wanted to say that. And then I wanted to say to Queez that you should go to your coworkers and set them straight and be like, actually, I reflected on what I was saying and here's the real situation. And it's like, also check out this podcast. Like,
yeah,
like if you really want to know what's up, I'm mm-hmm. a practitioner of social justice. So anyway, I just wanted to say those things and I'll hand it
I'll be keeping
for a quiz or whatever.
I'll be keeping on sleep, Mike. I ain't gonna lie. I really ain't into letting them know, you feel me, what's going on, because if y'all don't realize it already just through the conversation, we having these conversations, you know, anybody that talked to me, sure, this is the conversation. So they hear and then they like, I ain't gonna lie, I had to stay home MLK Day because the company, you know, 4th of July, Christmas, like all these, I think it's 5 holidays a year that they have off. So I didn't know at first. I'm like, yeah, we ain't coming on Monday, MLK Day. And the dude like, what? I'm like, MLK, we come on MLK Day? He's like, that's a holiday? I said, oh.
Arizona.
Oh, yeah, and I said, okay. So it's a white chick that work at my job too. She was tripping. She like, I bet you I want to be here. I'm not coming on MLK Day. How disrespectful. I'm like, what? And then she pulled me to the side later on, like, are you coming to work? I'm like, damn, she's trying to set me up. As soon as I say no, she's going to try to go tell the boss or something. But you know me, I'm like, oh, no, you ain't coming. I ain't coming. You coming? And she like, I would never disrespect. Woo, wah, wah, wah. I'm like, damn. I really, you know, I was like in a crazy space, but like she really be, like she remind me of liberation literacy, you know what I'm saying? She remind me of, I'll be like, okay, she really be standing. So it made me feel away, because I'm like, I have to stand up for this. Like, I have to not come, especially if she's finna not come. You feel me? So I ended up not going and shit. But I'd be keeping them sleep because I've just realized that it's the lack of education. It's not even the people that they are. It's the lack of, that they just don't have the mental capacity because they clearly wasn't taught anything. And Michael, you know me too. Like, when I feel like it's altercation, I'm gonna just beat you up. You feel me? Like, I'm not really gonna do no arguing and like back and forth and like this job. I throw this away. So with me recognizing that part, it's like, okay, I'm gonna be sitting here trying to educate someone who don't even have the ability of learning because they don't know that they don't know. They don't know that they don't know. You know what I'm saying? So like, I'd rather leave it, because I still don't have that part of my trauma. Hey, you want vegetables? Or you want the spoon? I'm sorry, Papa. I don't have that part of my self-control down. I realize when they say certain things or I be certain movements, I go back to the yard. I'm back in prison now. Now I'm back around. And then I'd be having to realize like, oh, like, man, y'all really don't mean this. Like, this is like a workplace altercation and then tomorrow we'll be cool. Like, nah, I really punch your stupid ass out. Like, quit playing with me. But also I wanted to say that, Adam, too, because I heard what you were saying as far as the things you deal with, and I literally is going through this myself, and I reread the book, The Four Agreements, And I had to realize that the only reason we get mad or fall into believing what other people say we are is when we agree with it, which means we already believe in it ourselves. So like, I have a lot of people that have their opinion of what they think I should be or who they think I am, depending on if they're mad at me or not. And I do fall into agreeing with what people say about me. And once you agree, it affects you differently. And now, since I've been conscious enough to know myself and know like I'm worthy of whatever I'm putting myself forward, and I'm worthy of, like, you know, certain shots get thrown at me and I don't even catch them no more. Like, I would be, it's insanity for me to argue with something that I know isn't a fact. You're telling me about me. You're telling me what I am. Just think about that for a second. I'm going to listen to what you're telling me I am when I know that you're mad. But yesterday I was, you know, it's even audiobook, man. Like, I don't really be promoting other people's work and stuff, but the Four Agreements is for us who have the habit of falling into believing what other people say about us. And I'm literally just now, you know, getting reintroduced to myself and my work. And like Michael said about like sleeping on the program, like I really have been sleeping on Tin Can Phone, but it's only because I've been sleeping on myself. And I'm like, I know what Tin Can Phone produces, and I know that people paying attention, and I know that I need to be well at my best to produce. And, you know, like dealing with trauma is going to help me and be able to kind of guide, you know, a youth or somebody that's coming behind me. But Tin Can Phone is so important. And when I'm not feeling myself, I feel like, you know, I can't even be tentative. I can't be because I'm the energy exchange, it could rock the show. You know, even with Trauma Almost Won, like, I don't tend to those things when I'm feeling like I'm not, and I'm starting to believe what other people are saying about me. And now that we found that place, man, you got to know who you are. My brother told me this: when you hear certain things in your head, whatever you hear people saying you are, who you are, wait until you hear it from your voice. Until then, you know it's not true, because you know who you are, Ma. You know who you are. So no matter what they say you is, what I say, it don't matter what they call you, it's what you answer to. I don't give a fuck what you call me. It's what I answer to. You can call me by my name and I still won't answer. But I don't feel like him today. You feel what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I just wanted to leave you with that though, because you really resonated with me when you mentioned the things that you were struggling with as far as like that. Like, I was just like, ooh, like, I just like, man, if it ain't your voice telling you that you that, it's only somebody's opinion. If it ain't your voice, you know what you are. You know who you are. If it ain't your voice saying it.
Wise words. Lou, you got anything?
Yeah, that was real for me too. Four Agreements was a beautiful book to read, and also recognizing, like, in a place that's full of fear and anger and hate, and we didn't have any good times there, that if you start listening to the hype, if you don't know yourself, then it'll tear you up, it'll destroy you, right? That's the key, and that takes years and years and remembering and continuing to remember and being in a good state of mind in this moment, right? Every moment trying to have a good state of mind. So I'm just really glad that, Adam, you joined us, and hopefully join us again. You're a guy I respect a lot, and I just thought it was a perfect place to kind of share your story, and a lot of ways has some parallels to what people who have been on the show and myself have been going through. And it's important that people know, you know.
Yeah,
it's a big deal. And I'm so glad that you're having some positive outcomes on the legal side and all the great things in your life. So it's great. Cool.
Adam, you got any final thoughts for us?
I think I've said most of what I had. Queez, Michael, Blue, I appreciate coming on here and talking with you guys. I feel like I could just like sit and talk for like hours. You know what I mean? I feel like we're just like on the same wavelength right here. But Tin Can Phone, appreciate the opportunity to tell my story and to, you know, hear a piece of your guys's.
Yeah. And we're super glad to have you. I mean, we'll be back for sure. I don't think this project's going anywhere. We're all kind of developing further. So yeah, we're really excited actually to catch you at this moment in your journey with some closure in some ways, in process in others, and then getting ready for a next big thing. I was going to say that I was going to close this out since Queez seems in full dad mode, but you ready to close out the show?
One more thing. I just want to say, Michael, you mentioned that idea of like, if you don't welcome people back, they're alone. Like this whole idea of belonging, right? And if we decide this is a part of Tin Can Phone, is letting people know that people are more complex than they'd want to give credit to. And Portland wants to welcome people back. But just remember, like, Michael was my, he was there like the week I got out. I saw him and a bunch of other people from the PSU Art and Social Practice group and other people, the other people that stepped up and decided that they were going to like welcome me back to Portland. And that's a huge thing. So the people who are listening, like, think about in your businesses or think about in your community how you welcome people back, because that could be the difference between, you know, somebody like making it or not. You know, it's super important. So
yeah, cool. And hopefully we can even organize around that. I think that there's events in our future and stuff like that, so looking forward. But Adam, thanks again for joining us. This has been a real original Tin Can Phone. You want to yell? You ready?
Misfit Adi, man. Tin Can Phone, baby. Hey, man, thank you for coming, man. Thank you for sharing your story, man. You already know you family when you come rock with us. Stripping the blues, stripping the colors, telling the truth, man. We appreciate having you. Blue, as always, you know you photo shoot fresh, sharp enough to cut a wrist. Michael Bernard Stevenson Jr., the artist, my brother, Misfit Adi, Tin Can Phone, whole gang of this, and now we out of here.
You are listening to the Tin Can Phone podcast, where you can hear about the influence incarceration has straight from the sources. We tell the stories from the inside out. So make sure to check us out on cable community radio every first Tuesday at 10 a.m. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple, and anywhere you love to catch your podcasts. And make sure to give us a follow over at 10canphonepodcast.com. And follow our Instagram at 10canphonepodcast. This Misfit Adi signing off. Hey.